MPB.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB Online.org. MPB Think Radio.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Southern Remedy. I'm Kevin Farrell with Dr. Rick DeShazo, Chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Southern Remedy is funded by the Foundation for Public Broadcasting through contributions from listeners like you.
To whom we say thank you. And we're going to have a good show today. Lots of good things to talk about, some surprises. So hang around and stay with us.
877-MPB-RING is the phone number this morning. If you have a question about your child's ear infections or hearing problems, give us a call, 877-672-7464. And a special thank you to listeners like you. Thanks to everyone who helped support us during our fundraising week last week. We really do appreciate your support. This is Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. And welcome back. This is Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Rick DeShazo, our chief researcher. Dr. Jeremy Jackson is with us as well. Our guest this morning, Dr. Mark Reed. You'll meet him in just a few minutes, but I want to take care of some other things first here at the top of the show. First and foremost, I'd like to promote a program that will be on Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio tomorrow evening at 7, also simulcast on MPB Television, hosted by our very own Dr. Rick. It's tomorrow night at 7. It's a special on swine flu. It'll be a panel discussion, and you can also call in your questions. So that's, again, tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. on MPB Radio, simulcast on MPB Television. Dr. Rick will be handling that discussion about swine flu.
My wife came back from the gym yesterday, and I was glad to see that she went. That's a good thing, with a list of information that she'd gotten about the swine flu from the folks at the gym, including all the reasons that you should not take the swine flu shot. Things like it has mercury in it, mm-hmm. which it doesn't, and it has adjuvants in it that make hair grow out of your nose and ears and other places, which it doesn't, all kinds of other things. So we're actually on that show going to talk about some of the not only some of the things about, you know, what's true and what's false, but also what you can do to take care of yourself and others who are having this. Everybody's going to have it. Now, whether or not they'll have symptoms with it or not, who knows? Some will, some won't. But it's since it's a totally new virus, everyone is probably going to have some of this. And so we'll talk a lot about that. Got some very interesting people coming on who some of whom you're familiar with. Mary Currier is going to be on from the State Health Department. I noticed that in the evening news the other night, our state was criticized along with Alabama for not having better publicity about where the flu shots were going to be given. So I'm going to nail her on that on TV. So it'll be interesting to see her response on that one. So lots of good things, and we hope folks will listen. And I don't think it will be boring. I do not think. Speaking of boring, we did drive time last week.
Yes.
And I was pleased to see the lights were still on this morning.
Exactly.
I guess our listeners stood up and did their part. I was afraid they'd cut us back another 10,000 watts. but it looks like, and I understand that they're still taking pledges if you want to call in.
That's
and so
correct.
Forth, so.
Yes, always throughout the year if you want to do that.
Couple of real quick items, and then we're going to go to our special guest.
Okay.
I gave you a list of some things Dr. Jackson and I found in the news this week that were sort of rang bells with us. And the first one is man's best friend. Now, this is an interesting one. You want to talk about that one?
Well, there was a study earlier this year that basically showed that for elderly, that dogs and cats, there was an increased risk of falls and fractures.
Not in the cats, in the people.
Yeah. Fractures of the people, the patients over 75 years old. Of course, it's a big risk. Hip fractures is a big problem for elderly, and pets in the home is a higher risk for those.
I call this the Billy Graham effect. You know, Billy Graham fractured his, I think it was his hip, several years ago after falling over his pet dog. It's a big, big problem with seniors. Because the dogs get under feet and the balance, you know, your balance is not off. It gets off as you get older. If you want to try to stand on one foot and compare what you can do as someone over 50 versus what someone in the 30s can do, it's very interesting to see. That's why we tell, you know, older people to stay off ladders and stuff like that. So anyway, be careful with your dog. It can be a problem, and it's not just the dog. It's the dog pulling you when you walk and tripping over.
Yeah, just environmental factors are a big risk factor, and animals in the house are one of those.
Now, another thing that came out this week is really important to me. I've shared with the listeners that my mom is in a nursing home and has advanced dementia, and this is the feeding tube issue. We always come to the point when we are taking care of our loved ones who become demented or have major strokes about whether or not to put in one of these PEG tubes.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you put a hole in the stomach through the outside and feed through there. And the families get in this terrible turmoil about whether or not to put these things in or not.
Right. And the study found that within 1 year of majority of nursing home patients with the dementia who received a feeding tube, they passed away within a year. So it showed that it really wasn't doing a lot to prolong life or make a difference in their lives.
And this confirms some other studies that showed that there's no benefit from putting these tubes in. In fact, the aspiration, which is one of the reasons people get them put in the first place, they aspirate, they can't swallow appropriately, occurs just as commonly after you put one in, if not more commonly, than otherwise. So they don't deal with the aspiration piece. So that hopefully that'll give some folks a little bit of comfort when they have to make this decision about not putting them in or putting them in. At least they'll have the information. But certainly there's no data to suggest that they're helpful in preventing death, in fact, or even prolonging life. So.
You know, the one that caught my eye was the one about insomnia. I know we talk a lot about sleep problems and sleep hygiene and that sort of thing on the air, but there's a new a study concerning insomnia out as well.
Yeah, so many people want a medication for their treatment, but this study found that most people need to talk to their doctors about other factors, including depression, anxiety, and things like obstructive sleep apnea. There's other things besides that should be addressed before just looking for a medication, because they can try to adjust those things. It might make a big difference in their sleep.
So we got these really effective sleep medicines that cover up the problem, but you know, you really ought to find out what the problem is first. And so doctors are being urged to really look for sleep apnea and restless leg syndrome, some of the things we've talked about. And then sleep hygiene, we've talked about that a lot. Americans just don't get ready for bed appropriately. One other quickie, and then we'll quit and go to the phones, because I know people will want to talk with our special guest. I have had a lot of seniors in my practice who have had vertebroplasty. That's where, you know, when you have one of your vertebrae collapse in your back, they go in there and inject magic glue and stuff like that in there, cement, mm-hmm. to sort of re-expand the collapsed vertebra. And so a lot of people have been having that done. And interestingly, a lot of my patients say it really works. And they've done a controlled study on this now.
Yeah, they've done a study. And what they found is that basically the vertebroplasty, it was no better than they did basically the placebo, the other procedure they did for the other group of patients. And as far as they filled out surveys and their report on the pain and recovery from that is that there was no benefit that it's been shown through this study.
It was interesting that 3 days after they either injected real cement or nothing, but they put a needle in your back. And after 3 days, the percentage of people who had improvement, which was a significant percent, I forgot what the number was, 60 or 70%, some large percentage, was the same in the ones who had the sham procedure, which is the needle without the injection of the real cement, is the others. And that just shows you how, people live with doctors, without doctors and without medicines for eons before, you know, doctors were developed. We have these endogenous chemicals in our brain that are for pain relief. And that's one of the reasons why this placebo effect works. You can actually train yourself to deal with pain. And so I wouldn't have that done, really wouldn't. Let me introduce you to our very well-known otolaryngologist who is here with us today. And he is a specialist in pediatric otolaryngology, Dr. Mark Reed, who is presently associate professor of otolaryngology and pediatrics at UMC. He went off to Cincinnati. It was a program about Cincinnati. I forgot.
WKRP.
He went off to Cincinnati for his training. And after doing some general surgery at UMC, and he went to Mississippi College. I guess that means he's a Baptist. We'll pray for him. he's been very active in this, in the American Academy of Pediatrics national hearing program. So what he specializes in is otolaryngology, head and neck problems in children. And we're just real happy to have you with us today. And there aren't many of you guys around, right? I mean, you're sort of one of a few, right?
That's right. Thanks for letting me be here today, Dr. Chiesa. There are about 300 pediatric otolaryngologists in the country. Not too many.
All right. We actually have a phone call lined up, so why don't we jump right into things here. Let's go to the phones. This is a call from Kosciuszko. Julie's on the line. Julie, what's your question this morning?
Well, my question is about my two-year-old daughter. My her pediatrician has been telling me that she needs to get tubes, but I was really wanting to enroll her in swimming lessons, and I've heard some controversy that children that have tubes are not allowed to go swimming or, you know, get submerged in water. So I was wondering if that is true, or if she gets tubes, can she go ahead and, you know, get in the pool, take the swimming lessons, and submerge herself underwater?
That is one that I hear very frequently, and I'm glad we've got an expert to help with it. Julie, before he gives you the answer, let's make sure that all of our listeners are up to date on what goes on the ear. The ear's pretty complicated, isn't it?
It can be real complicated.
Right. So let's just sort of see if we can simplify it, because I know you're going to be talking about what you do in there. It's basically a little cup, and it has a little membrane over one side, sort of like a teacup with a piece of saran wrap over the top that's the eardrum. Is that
sort of? Think of it like a drum.
A drum.
The head of a drum, almost.
Okay. And inside of this, and that's the middle ear, right?
Yes.
That's sort of this drum. And then the outer ear is just this canal with these, in the case of my family, these very strange things that stick out from the side of your face.
That's right.
That make you look like Dumbo. So that's the outer ear connects to the middle ear. And so when you look down in the ear, what you actually see is the eardrum, right?
The eardrum.
And if it's working right, you can look through it. And what do you see? What can you see?
Well, I think of it like a pane of glass. And so we can see some through the eardrum. We can see some of the ear bones. We can see if there's fluid behind the eardrum. We can see sometimes if there are masses or tumors behind the ear. But mostly we want to see air. We want to see nothing.
So the middle ear is supposed to be sort of just an air pocket.
Right.
Okay. So what keeps so there's a drainage tube in there, right? The eustachian tube?
That's correct. The eustachian tube connects the middle ear behind the eardrum to the back of the nose. That's how air enters into that space and hopefully equalizes the pressure from the middle ear to the outside.
Okay, so that's the middle ear, which is what you're saying is there's some bones in there that conduct vibrations from this drum effect. And then how does that heat make you hear? How does it get from the middle ear to your brain? What is the connection there?
Well, when sound hits that eardrum, it makes it vibrate. And that vibration is transferred through these ear bones, the three ear bones that you learned about in school, to the inner ear. And from the inner ear, the sound becomes real as it goes to the brain, and we understand what's being said. And so if there's a problem anywhere from really the outside of the ear all the way to the brain, you could have hearing problems.
So the inner ear, is that stuck down in that bone that you can feel behind your ear, or where is that located?
Yeah, it's straight back from the eardrum, and It is in that hard bone. It's the hardest bone in the body, in fact, the temporal bone.
And that's what you can feel when you stick your finger right behind your ear.
Well, that's part of it.
Okay, Julie, we're definitely going to get your question. We just hang on one more minute. We had to get that set up where people will know, because he's going to talk about plumbing when we come back from the break, and it wouldn't have made any sense if we didn't set that up. So hang on there.
We're looking for questions about ears this morning, your children's ears specifically, either ear infections or hearing problems. 877-MPB-RING is the number to call. It's 877-672-7464. As Dr. Rick mentioned, we'll take Julie's question, finish that up, and also Tracy's on the line. We'll get to her question as well, and we'll be back after this.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. MPBOnline.org. MPB Think Radio.
Welcome back to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kevin Farrell with Dr. Rick DeShazo. Our chief researcher, Dr. Jeremy Jackson, is here with us. And our guest this morning is Dr. Mark Reed. He'll be answering questions about your child's ear, whether it be an ear infection or hearing problems or what other ear-related question you might have for us this morning.
And we got other stuff up there, too. We got throat and tonsils, and we got neck. We got dizziness. We got headaches. In my case, we've got brain problems. We've got all kinds of things we can talk about up there in that area.
A quick reminder before we go back to the phones. Tomorrow evening, that's Thursday, October 28th at 7 p.m. on MPB Radio and MPB Television, there'll be a special about swine flu hosted by Dr. Rick. It's a panel discussion, and also will be a chance for you to call in your questions about swine flu. So that's tomorrow evening at 7, a special on MPB Radio and MPB Television. Julie had called in from Kosciuszko and asked about whether ear tubes affected the swimming or whether swimming was allowable with ear tubes, and we kind of went through, and everybody's got a better understanding, I think, of the structure of the ear now. Let's talk about the tubes in swimming.
So you just said there was already a tube in the ear. There's this eustachian tube that connects the middle ear to the back of the nose.
Right.
Why put another tube in the ear? That seems sort of, you know, superfluous to me.
Yeah, great question. It's because the eustachian tube does a real poor job, especially in children, in doing what it should do. It doesn't equalize the pressure like it should. And so the children end up having a closed space. They have a vacuum, essentially, that develops behind the eardrum that needs to be opened back up.
What's wrong with it? Is it crooked, or what's the problem with the eustachian tube?
Well, there are lots of problems. One is it's pretty flat, and so it doesn't drain well by gravity. So it's pretty horizontal. It's also pretty short, and it seems like it would be a good thing to be short. It's easy for air to get in there, but that's not true. It's easy for bacteria to get into the ear to cause ear infections. So that's one of the big problems children have. They have short, flat eustachian tubes. And as they grow, the eustachian tube lengthens, makes it harder for bacteria to get in, and it becomes more dependently able to drain the ear.
So what you do is you basically put in an extra eustachian tube.
Yeah, it takes some place.
How do you do that? What happens?
Yeah, they have to have surgery. And so the surgery is, fortunately, one of the easiest surgeries you can have if you want to think of it like that. I think it's much harder for parents than it is for the children. But children breathe some anesthesia gas to go to sleep. The whole surgery takes 10 minutes to do. We make a teeny little incision in the eardrum. Use a microscope to see this very well. And once we make the incision, then we can clean out the fluid or infection behind the eardrum. And then the tube literally looks like a spool or one of these big cable rolls that you'll see on the side of the road sometime. And so it has flanges on one side and the other. It's really short. Most people think of a tube as being something real long, but it's actually very short, real flat, and has a hole in it. And so that hole is going to functionally take the place of the eustachian tube by letting air get through the eardrum into the middle ear. And so the pressure on the inside is the same as the pressure on the outside.
Okay, so it basically decompresses this little drum
right
there. So what about swimming and taking a shower and doing all the things that little kids like to do?
Yeah, terrific question. One of the most commonly asked questions I get. It's interesting that tubes have been around since about 1954, so they've been around a long time. And I see now even third-generation children who've had tubes, and so their parents, even sometimes grandparents, will come in and say, "Hey, look, I know we have to wear earplugs when you put tubes in." I say, "No, that's actually not true. It's not true. It was true when you were growing up only because we didn't know better." And that's unfortunate because a lot of parents, grandparents grew up being fearful of water getting in their ears. But we know now, in fact, we've known probably for a good dozen years, that it's actually hard for water, plain water, to get through the tube. The tube is very small. The opening is just a little bit bigger than a millimeter. So it's very tiny, and the surface pressure of the water, surface tension of the water, makes it very difficult for water to get through. So swimming in a pool is fine. You have to go deeper than about 3 feet for the water pressure to force water through the tube, and even then it doesn't usually cause a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Swimming is fine. Bathing in the tub is fine. But swimming in lake or ocean water, we still recommend earplugs for that because the water's just so dirty.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news. So how long do they stay in there?
Usually around a year, 12 to 15 months, sometimes longer. Sometimes they'll stay in so long we have to take them out, which is about 3 years. We usually recommend taking the tube out.
And by that time, the eustachian tube works better?
We hope.
Yeah. Good.
All right, Julie, thank you for your call this morning. We're on Southern Remedy talking about ear health. If you have a question for us, call us at 877-MPB-RING, 877-672-7464. Back to the phones we go. Another question about ear tubes. It's from Tracy in Belzona. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning. I have a three-year-old who probably is going to require tubes, but I have heard some stories that this may cause hearing loss. And I was wondering if there was anything to that.
Oh, that's a real good question. In fact, we find that it doesn't cause hearing loss having a tube in the eardrum, but it does, we know for sure, improve hearing in most children, because most children who need tubes have fluid behind their eardrum or having repeated ear infections that ends up causing fluid that subsequently can cause what we call a temporary hearing loss or a conductive hearing loss due to that fluid. And once a tube is in place, it resolves that. So it is the most surefire way of knowing that your child's hearing is going to be good by putting the tube in. The only time we ever see any potential for hearing loss with a tube is in the 0.5% of patients who have tubes who end up having a small hole in the eardrum. And usually the hearing loss with that is very mild, and we can fix it with another surgery.
While we're talking about hearing issues, as a grandparent, and I'm sure some of our callers will relate to this and probably have something more intelligent than I to say about it. But what is this? One of our grandkids flunked the hearing screen in the first grade, I think it was. Yeah, what kind of hearing screens are usually done in schools? And do the pediatricians do routine hearing screens, or is something we should ask for? Or what is the deal on that?
Yeah, schools do provide hearing screens at certain ages, and in first grade is one. And they use portable hearing tests, and usually they're not in soundproof booths. They're not necessarily the ideal kind of situations that you want to do a hearing test in. And so we commonly see children who've been screened in school who fail that hearing screen, and some have legitimate reasons for failing and others don't, and they actually pass a hearing test. But if you do a real hearing test, you want it to be in a soundproof booth. You want it done by preferably a pediatric audiologist.
Here's the problem. None of my grandkids have normal hearing. Like, there's certain things that they can never hear, like pick up your clothes.
That's right. Exactly.
It's time for dinner. Or take out the dog.
Yeah.
How do you know when a kid really has a problem with hearing? I mean, yeah. It seems that most of my grandkids have them anyway.
Yeah, well, definitely hearing and listening are two different things. And so it's tough.
What are the signs?
In babies, it's really, really hard to know. In fact, in states that don't have universal hearing screening like we do here in Mississippi, the average age of detection for a child with very severe, even deafness, is 2.5 years old. That's startling.
That delays their speech and everything else.
Absolutely. In fact, that's the reason they're picked up, because their parents notice that they never did learn to talk. And so that's way too late. We don't like to hear stories like that. So in Mississippi, we have universal hearing screening, which can usually pick up the children right at birth or shortly after. And then we can do early intervention, whatever's required to get them hearing as quickly as possible, usually preferably by 6 months. We want to try to get them hearing as well as possible. Children who are born deaf can be candidates for cochlear implantation, which is an electronic device to help them have their hearing restored. Most children who have hearing loss actually have conductive hearing loss, which is mostly due to ear infection problems.
We're on Southern Remedy today talking with Dr. Mark Reed. We're taking questions about problems with your child's ear, nose, and throat. I need to expand that. It's not just ears, but the entire...
All that stuff up there.
Whatever that system is called. But let's go back to the phones. David has called in from Biloxi. He has a question for us today. Go ahead, David.
Yes, I was primarily calling about tinnitus, but I did hear your comment about children, the difference in hearing and listening. And I know it was a chronic problem for me, and both of my children had it, but we referred to it as hard of listening.
I like that. I like that. That's a very good diagnosis. I'm going to apply that.
But I was, apparently tinnitus is hereditary in my family. My mother had it, I have it. My son has it. My grandson seems to have it. He's only 3 years old. And I was wondering if there was anything at all. I mean, I've seen things advertised, heard it on the radio, seen it in magazines. You could take a pill or something. but I've also read that there just wasn't much to be done about it.
David, it would help our audience if you would describe what the sensation it is that you and your family hear. What particular are you hearing? Bells or whistles or
no? It is a ringing that's constant. Sometimes it's worse than others. My mother had it to the point she couldn't even sleep. She slept with the television on to cover it up and has for years. I've had it for about 4 years. My son has just started with it, and my grandson seems to be complaining about it. But he, you know, like most children, he stays in the pool a lot, and he has earaches, and I don't know if he's just heard us discussing it.
Yours is a sort of a high-frequency electronic sort of radio sound, like ding or something like that?
Exactly. Uh-huh. It's a whine, and it does change from time to time. Sometimes it seems worse than others.
Yeah, tinnitus is a real problem for a lot of people. And
does it always sound – is it the same sound everybody gets?
No.
So what are the variety of sounds you can get?
Well, different pitches primarily, and if you do a hearing test, you can pretty much localize the frequency.
But everybody gets it occasionally, don't they? I mean, sometimes I wake up and
a little bit,
and then it's gone.
Right. Yeah, you can have that, but what he has, a permanent type of tinnitus, you want to make sure, first of all, you don't have any progressive hearing loss associated with that or a treatable medical problem. Something called Meniere's disease is treatable. Usually have dizziness associated with that and hearing loss. But if you have pure tinnitus, it's a real tough issue because we don't know of any specific kind of drug or treatment that is completely effective for tinnitus.
Do you get it in both ears or one ear?
It could be either way.
So it can be benign tinnitus, not associated with any underlying tumor or anything else in your head.
Correct.
And you can have it in one ear or the other.
But what's interesting about tinnitus is if you know that you have it in one ear, and if you went in and you utterly destroyed that ear, if you took out the inner ear completely, you'd still have tinnitus because it tends to be a brain effect. It's not necessarily just in your ear.
Hmm.
That's what makes it a really tough issue. So unfortunately, no, there's not a great treatment for tinnitus. And what your mother does is a great thing. Actually, she's learned that she can mask the tinnitus. And some people turn on the radio on the in-between channels just to give a competing noise so they don't hear that ringing in their ear constantly.
Can you use a hearing device or inner ear device with some kind of noise in it to help?
Yes.
So the hearing aid people can help you with this too. Huh?
Yes.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
All right, David, appreciate your call today on Southern Remedy. We are on Southern Remedy talking about problems with your children's ears, nose, and throat. We'll be back with more. Remember the phone number if you'd like to get your question in today, 877-MPB-RING, 877-672-7464. We'll be back after this.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB Online.org. MPB Think Radio.
You're listening to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kevin Farrell with Dr. Rick DeShazo. Our chief researcher, Dr. Jeremy Jackson, is with us today. Our guest is Dr. Mark Reed, and he's helping us understand more about problems with your child's ear, nose, or throat. If you have a question today for us, our number is 877-MPB-RING. It's 877-672-7464. And remember, if you can't get to the phone or if you have a question that comes up to you throughout the week, you can always email southernremedy@mpbonline.org.
So we left David pretty high and dry down there in Biloxi. And by the way, that's a good way to be in Biloxi. You're not saying we can't do anything for tinnitus, are you? That was sort of where we left it.
Well, there's not a great medical treatment for it yet. We're hoping there will be at some point. But
all right, say you've got somebody like him. Everybody in the family's got it. So if you try to teach them to ignore it, I guess that's what you do. And if you can't do that, what can you do for the problem? If it really drives you nuts, what can you do? Can you go to get some kind of other therapy, some kind of avoidance therapy, or trained by a clinical psychologist, or what do you do for these people?
We try to mask it as much as possible and just give some competing noise so that it's not so bothersome. But
so there are some devices that you can stick in the ears that has a little bit of white sound or something in back of it to cover it up, or what do you do? Well, I have some adults that have had this. It just drives them nuts.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's disruptive.
It is. And if you really, especially as an adult, if you continue to have tinnitus, I would recommend seeing an otologist who specializes in ear problems, particularly inner ear problems, to see and make sure that nothing else is going on.
So the big thing you worry about, I guess, and I only see the worst case scenario. I don't see everyday stuff like you do, is the so far as tinnitus and Meniere's and stuff like that, is this acoustic neuroma thing. And that is a big issue, right? Because it's usually a benign tumor that grows, can give you all kinds of hearing issues. And if you don't get it caught soon enough, it can get big enough to cause compression up there of your neurological parts and give you some serious issues.
Oh, yeah.
So how do those usually show up?
Acoustic neuromas are tumors of the ear nerve.
And so that's a thing that goes from the middle ear to your brain through the inner ear? Is that?
It's actually the connection from your brain to your inner ear. That's right. And if you have an acoustic neuroma, it's usually a very, very slow-growing tumor. It's something that you're not going to know that you have. It doesn't cause pain. Eventually, most people who have one come in because they can't hear very well in one ear.
Okay. And that's what I was trying to get with the one versus the two ears. So if you got something going on in one ear, that's usually an issue that needs to be checked out by a specialist, right?
It could be for both ears, too. You can have bilateral acoustic neuromas, too. So if you have hearing loss in one ear particularly, we study that with specialized type hearing test, and then we get an MRI to make that diagnosis.
Okay.
All right, we're on Southern Remedy today, talking with Dr. Mark Reed about problems of the ear, nose, and throat. We'll go back to the phones for some more questions. Let's go to Max, who's called in this morning. Max, what's your question for us?
Yes, good morning. I'm calling, actually, it's a two-part question. With the change of the season or this flu condition, my eustachian tube, I've had a lot of catarrh and post-nasal drip, and subsequently one of my ears, and this happened last year at this time too, closes. And and I went to the ear doctor. I mean, the ear actually closed for a period of 3 months last year. And I went to the ear doctor, and he went to examine my ear, and he said, "Max," he says, "I can't examine your ear. You've got something called cold water ear."
Okay.
And this is, I've never heard of such a thing, but evidently when I was a kid, if you've used to swim in very cold water, you can get these bony growths on the inside of your ear that totally block the vision of your eardrum.
Yes.
So,
my question really is
about this condition and whether or not I should have these things removed or which is being recommended. I don't think they're related to the catarrh in my eustachian tube.
No,
that's my call.
Yeah, that's a good question. What you're describing is something called an osteoma, or a bony growth, as you say, within the ear canal, and it is typically described with cold water swimming. It's a very interesting phenomenon, and so I would say if your osteoma is big enough to block your ear canal, especially if it's causing hearing problems, you should certainly consider having it removed. And another reason would be because if you can't see your eardrum and the osteoma is so big that it's blocking the ear canal, that you're still going to have some buildup of skin and wax behind that blockage, and that could cause problems in the future for you too. So you should have that looked at.
So that's basically just a bony overgrowth.
Yes.
The ear canal just has an extra bump in it.
Yes, big bump.
I've never heard of that before.
Mm-hmm.
I learned something. So, and they just go in there and drill that thing out,
right?
Like you would with a dental drill or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's no big deal, right?
Well, I think you'd do fine.
As long as it wasn't me, it wouldn't be a big deal.
All right, Max, appreciate your call. Back to the phones we go. About a bunch of calls lined up here, so let's see if we can help some folks out. Thomas has called in from Panola. What's your question this morning?
I've got two questions.
All right.
First one is, my wife has these knots that come up behind both her ears. They become real sore.
All right, you want us to do that one first?
Yeah, sure, we can do that.
Yeah, that's okay. My wife's got a lot of sore head problems, too, but that's another issue. Okay, she's got knots behind her ears.
Yeah, we have little lymph knots, lymph glands behind the ears, and they have them all in your neck and in your hair, head. And sometimes those will get inflamed or infected, and they'll be very tender. And so, especially for a woman, you'd want to make sure that she's not braiding her hair too tight or putting some kind of chemicals in her scalp area that may be inflaming those lymph glands, or having some kind of scalp infection, some bumps, things like that that could be treated.
What about infection from pierced ears? When those places get, where do they get lumps and bumps? I've noticed some young people that come in with a lot of bumps around their ears, lymphadenopathy.
Any inflammation or infection, as you know, in any part of the body will drain into lymph glands, and so usually something in the ear area is going to be around the ear and the upper neck area.
Now, Thomas, the thing we get concerned about with persistent lymphadenopathy, lymph nodes in the neck or around the ear, is whether they persist and whether they're tender or not. That's helpful. If they're tender, that actually usually means they're not malignant. They're not less likely to be malignant. But if those things persist for long periods of time,
then we can really worry about potentials for tumors, malignancies, especially in the head and neck area.
Yeah, so for smokers, anytime you have a smoker who has lymph nodes pop up, you need a really good head and neck exam. And not all doctors are real good at doing those because you have to know the anatomy of the neck and the tonsils and so forth and so on. So if that's persistent, that needs to be checked out. Is that helpful?
Yes, sir. Are you saying that when they're sore and tender, there's nothing really to be worried about? Or?
Well, you want to make sure that if they're tender, that they're not actively infected. And usually there's some element of infection when they're tender. So generally, if you have a tender lymph node, you want to get it checked out, and antibiotics may be helpful for that.
Right. I know she has a lot of sinus problems.
Okay.
I noticed, you know, at certain times when she's having a sinus attack, that they appear.
Well, I think that's probably worth having checked out, okay? But the likelihood of it being cancer, since they come and go, is fairly low. So there's probably an infection somewhere that needs to be sorted out. What about your other question?
My second question is, you know how you sneeze and you hold your nose, catch your nose to keep from, you know, and that pressure builds up in your ears?
Right.
I'd done that one day, and I had something shoot out of my left ear, and it hit the window.
Whoa.
I have no idea what it was. It hadn't affected my ear or anything. It's just something I heard, you know, just uninspectedly.
Did it make a loud noise when you did that?
Yeah, it's like a rock, you know, a little tap, a little pebble hit the side of the window.
Did you have any hearing problems after that?
No, in fact, my hearing got better.
Okay. Usually when you have something come out your ear when you sneeze, it usually means you have a hole in your eardrum, and you're just blowing the air through your ear instead of your nose or your mouth. And that's something I'd probably have checked out.
Well, you wouldn't recommend somebody do that. That's a home remedy, I think, for opening up your eustachian tube is holding your nose and, you know, doing that.
I wouldn't recommend sneezing with it.
Yeah, but that'll actually blow a hole in your eardrum, right, if you do that?
Well, we recommend all the time, especially in older children, I'll recommend them popping their ears if they have some bad vacuum behind the
eardrum. Okay, well, tell us what popping, how you do that.
Okay. For younger children, I'd kind of give them a swimming analogy. I said, you know, you're going to go swimming. You want to hold your breath. So we take a big, deep breath, big breath, and then you're going to hold your nose sometimes. And so we're going to hold our breath and hold our nose, and then we're going to try to blow bubbles out our ear. Let's pretend we're underwater. Let's blow bubbles out. And so for the younger children, they get that idea, and they can pop the ear, which equalizes the pressure.
So they're popping their eustachian tube open, is that right?
Blowing air through the eustachian tube to the middle ear to try to get the vacuum out.
And that's the same thing you do on an airplane when your ear pops up.
Right.
So that's the same thing going on. It's basically the air gets sucked out or absorbed out of the middle ear. You get sort of sucking feeling in your ear. It feels like the inside of your ear is being, and you can pop that open.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Tom, I'm calling the sheriff to come down there and see what you blew out of your ear there. You'll see him when drive up with a blue light on. So, thanks for your call.
All right, let's see. Let's go to another phone call here before our final break of the hour. We'll go to Gaucher. Kim is on the line. Kim, what's your question for us?
Yes, my son is 9 years old. He has Down syndrome, and he's on his third or fourth set of tubes. I've sort of lost track, but they were put in 4 years ago in one ear, but the other ear, actually, when the third set came out, it left a hole, so we just have a hole in the right eardrum, and he keeps getting really pretty severe infections in there, and I kind of have a question. The ENT says we just need to do nothing because it's acting as a natural tube, even though it's bigger than a tube would be. And my pediatrician's getting a little worried that, no, it does need to be patched, even if we had to go back and put another set of tubes in.
You know, that's a really good question. And I see many children with Down syndrome. As a group, children with Down syndrome have a little bit more severe ear problems than children who don't have Down syndrome. And so they end up having enough problems that they may need multiple sets of tubes. And so at 9 years old, I actually think you're getting very good advice from your ENT doctor. A natural hole is as good as a tube as long as you're keeping it dry. That's the exception. So it's a little different when you have a hole in your eardrum versus a tube. You do want to keep water out, and I'm sure you're working hard to do that. But unless the hole is just huge, his hearing should still be pretty good, and you should monitor his hearing, should get it checked just to make sure. But if you patch it, there's still a great chance he's going to need to have a tube put back in, and so you've sort of defeated the whole purpose unless you're doing it exclusively to improve his hearing.
So, Kim, the big issue isn't that he's having symptoms from this. It's just that there seems to be some controversy between the pediatrician and the ENT guy about whether or not it should be fixed. Did we have the issue right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I understand he just told you, let's make sure we're straight on this, is there's no need to repair it because, number one, it's probably not causing a problem and you're checking his hearing anyway. And, number two, if you repair it, he may blow it out again. Was that what you said?
Yeah. One thing that I want to make sure is the other ear good or does it still have a tube in it?
It still has a tube.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you'd want to keep that hole. I think that's very good advice.
Hope that helps.
It does. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Thanks for the call, Kim. We're on Southern Remedy today talking about problems with ears, nose, and throat with Dr. Mark Reed. Going to take our final break of the hour. We'll be back with more medical questions and answers after this.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB Online.org. MPB Think Radio.
You're listening to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. I'm Kevin Farrell with Dr. Rick DeShazo, our chief researcher, Dr. Jeremy Jackson, and our guest this morning, Dr. Mark Reed. We're talking about problems with ears, noses, and throats.
Your noses and throats.
And we've got some callers lined up. You know, Dr. Reed, one thing that I think a lot of people are confused about is proper ear hygiene, whether to put things in the ear or not. And we actually have a call that's somewhat related to that. It's Cleon's called in from Henleyfield. Cleon, what do you have for us today?
Good morning. I have fluid in my ear. It's for 50 years. I was always taught never to put anything smaller than my elbow in my ear.
Good advice.
This fluid tickles. It tickles so much that it wakes me up. And so I can't live without Q-tips, and it doesn't seem to be doing any harm to my hearing. Is there anything else I should be doing?
Are you sure you have fluid behind your
ear? Well, yes, because I stick a Q-tip in, and then I press against the ear, so and it comes out moist.
Okay, I think what you're talking about is more of an outer ear problem in your ear canal. You probably don't have fluid behind your eardrum if your hearing is pretty good, but some people have problems with wax, and most people don't. The ears are self-cleaning, so the advice you got about the elbow was great advice. We never want to use Q-tips in the ears. They're not for the outer ear in the ear canal. They're just for the auricle, the big part of the outer ear. And so if you put a Q-tip in your ear, for most people, you're pushing wax in. I think of it like a muzzle loader. You know, we have some hunters here in Mississippi that use muzzle loader guns, and you just ram in that cerumen and that wax further in there, and it causes impactions in the ear, which can be very difficult to clean out. So if you have itching in the ear, you may have something more like an eczema-type problem, because the ear canal is made up of skin like the rest of the body, and sometimes it can be real itchy, and there are preparations topically that we can use to take care of that.
Well, it's a tickling that if it wakes me up, it's generally the ear that is up, not the one that's against the pillow. And sometimes by rolling over, I can get the tickling to subside. So it's...
You probably need to have your primary care doctor or whoever take a look inside of that ear and see what's going on. Have you had anybody actually look at it? Because you can see problems with the external ear fairly easily just looking down in there.
Well, so many years ago, and all I got was a good scolding for it.
Well, don't ever be scolded by your doctor. You're paying his bill. We work for you. So you might want to have that checked. It actually sounds like you may have something irritating it down in there, and chronic external otitis media, which is what it sounds like. There are certain drops you can put in there regularly, and that just takes care of it. So I wouldn't give up on that, even though it's been a chronic problem. Have somebody take a look at it, and I think you can get some relief, because it sounds like it's driving you nuts. And
thank you very much.
Now that we took away your Q-tips, you really will go out of orbit. So get it looked at.
Thanks for the call today on Southern Remedy. Let's go right back to the phone, see if we can't squeeze in at least one more call before the end of the hour. Margaret has called in from Clinton. Margaret, what's your question for us?
Yes, sir. I have a question for Dr. Reed. My 7-year-old daughter snores terribly every night, and it's been going on for several months. And her pediatrician told me that her tonsils were huge, and he recommended that we actually see an ENT to get them out. I had my tonsils out when I was a little girl, and it was just terrible. Mm. I was just curious to see, would you recommend getting your tonsils out for snoring?
Okay, usually we don't for just snoring. Okay, if a child is just snoring and no other problems, we don't recommend it. But you want to make sure that she's not having what we call sleep-disturbed breathing, where she's very restless at night, gasping, that kind of stuff, or stopping breathing, which is what we call obstructive sleep apnea. Those issues can be extremely important for her. You have to get restful sleep. You have to get into dream sleep to have a rested brain. And children, especially who don't get restful sleep, do very poorly in school. In fact, we know based on studies that they tend to be in the lower third of their class. And so snoring is a strong indicator that she could have these problems, but you need to watch for that. And if she does, we absolutely would recommend getting her tonsils and adenoids taken out, because that's a curative for. Now, one mentioned you had your tonsils out. It was a bad experience. It's a bad experience for most children who have what we call a regular kind of tonsillectomy. There are other types of tonsillectomy that are just for her problem, just for breathing type issues, that make the recovery much easier. Something called an intracapsular tonsillectomy is the easiest kind of tonsillectomy, and children do very well from that. It solves their problem. And I think you'd be very happy if she had that done if she needed it.
Now, the nose can also cause problems with snoring, right?
It's from the adenoid, which the adenoid is like your tonsil in the very back of the nose. It's called the nasopharynx, right? The top of the throat. So if your adenoids get big enough, they're primarily responsible for the snoring. But they can make you breathe through your mouth constantly instead of your nose, and that can cause problems.
So, Margaret, has she had a course of topical nasal steroids, the things like Nasonex, Nasoril, stuff like that?
She sure has. She's been on it quite some time, and it's not helping. And that noise that he made sounds like my house every night.
Oh, she needs to be checked out, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a sleep apnea in a child is a big, big issue, and it not only can get school problems, you're going to get high blood pressure and other things from it. So sounds like you've got one of those alarm symptoms for having that checked, and you're getting some good advice for that. And it's very common with increasing size of our kids now.
Absolutely. And the problem she's talking about is actually the most common reason we take out tonsils now. It's not for strep throat problems anymore.
All right, Margaret, thanks for the call. Let's go to one final call before we wrap up this program. It's Christina, who's an audiologist at USM. Go ahead for us, please.
Sorry, it's Dr. Perrigo. I'm not an audiologist, but I am a teacher of the deaf, and I'm with the Department of Speech and Hearing at the University of Southern Mississippi.
And it's a mighty good one, too.
We're the only people in the state who are training audiologists and training teachers of the deaf. I want to stress to parents, if your child fails a newborn hearing screening, you must follow up. We have 50% of families are not going to the audiologist and getting the appropriate follow-up, and that's important for them to make sure that the child does that and wears their hearing technology so that they have access to spoken language. I think a lot of parents also don't realize that their child could pass the newborn hearing screening and do fine, but have a progressive hearing loss that doesn't show up until later. And it's really not a good idea just to bang some pans and say, well, you know, the child can turn. There's a very, very quick test that any parent can do. It's called the six sound test. And they just say these six sounds from behind the child and see if the child will turn. And the sounds are ah, oo, ee, sh, s, and mm. Those sounds, again, are ah, oo, ee, sh, s, mm.
Is that on your website? Do you have a website?
I will put it on the website for people. And they should know that would be a very quick test to see if their child is responding to all the speech sounds. Because even a mild hearing loss can lead to a child having problems in school. So it's very important to do that.
All right, we've got to go. Thank you for calling us in and reminding us all that. A reminder that tomorrow evening at 7, a special on MPB Radio and MPB Television on the swine flu hosted by Dr. Rick. Southern Remedy is a co-production of the University of Mississippi Medical Center and MPB Think Radio. From UMC, our producer and content coordinator is Janice Quinn. Our chief researcher is Dr. Jeremy Jackson. From MPB, our producer and technical director is Ezra Wall. For Dr. Rick DeShazo, I'm Kevin Farrell, thanking Dr. Mark Reed for joining us and asking that you tune in tomorrow at 9 for Creature Comforts, and hope that you'll be with us again next Wednesday at 9 for another Southern Remedy, heard right here on MPB Think Radio.
See you soon.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. MPBOnline.org. MPB Think Radio.